It's time for the Rink Rats with Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats, Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger. We are here. It is Wednesday. The Golden Knights are no longer undefeated, so clearly the world is ending.
That 82-0 dream is over.
I mean, it's never going to happen.
Obviously.
No, it's not obvious. What are you talking about? There were a couple of angry people last night. Like people mad, like legitimately mad that like an elite team from the East came in here and actually beat the Golden Knights.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that if they would have gotten just crushed by Boston, that would be extremely discouraging, especially considering how bad San Jose's looked. Because through those first two games, the biggest question was, is Vegas this good or are the Sharks just this bad? And the answer is clearly the Sharks are just this bad because they can't beat anyone. They're 0-4 and haven't even had a competitive night of hockey. So if Boston would have come in and just steamrolled Vegas,
right,
I will admit that I would be a little concerned. But you could argue the Golden Knights outplayed Boston last night, so a loss isn't all that big of a deal.
Present that argument to me.
So they had a 2-0 lead.
Okay.
They outshot them. They outchanced them. They had more high danger chances, and expected goals for were in favor of Vegas. So basically every analytic you can possibly find says the Golden Knights were the better team last night. But kind of similar to last year when they wouldn't allow hardly any Corsi but then would lose the game, you only give up six chances, but all six are grade A awesome chances, and Boston took advantage because they're really freaking good. So I'm not going to sit here and say the Golden Knights should have won and they were robbed. Like, Boston deserves the win. But those were two very evenly matched teams.
I wanted you to present the argument mainly because the difference in the game to me, outside of turnovers and puck management, and we'll kind of get to that because those are trends that cannot happen against good teams. But what ends up happening when you turn the puck over, when you're not managing the puck well, when you get to your blue line and you can just chip it off the boards and get it out, and you don't end up doing that, and you turn the puck over to Brad Marchand, or you turn the puck over to David Pastrnak, it's going to end up in the back of your net because they're just that good.
Yeah.
So the problem with the Golden Knights last night was, yes, they didn't give up a ton of extra chances, but the chances they gave up were to Marchand and Pastrnak and Bergeron, guys that are going to make you pay, guys that don't need seven or eight different chances every single night to score. They only need a couple. When Marchand had the puck and David Pastrnak is going back door and you've got Nick Hague trying to defend that, it's an automatic goal.
Yeah, pretty much every time.
And it would be an automatic goal if it were, you know, Shea Theodore defending or Braden McNabb defending. Like, that's just how talented those guys are.
They're really good.
So I would argue that Boston was incredibly opportunistic. I mean, that indirect pass from Pastrnak to Marchand on the third goal of the
off
game
of Theodore's
was just
that was a terrible turnover
and,
by
and
Theodore.
I feel like I understood what Theodore was trying to do. He was trying to dump the puck in, but he just flubbed it.
Yeah.
And like, those mistakes will happen, but you have to be able to recover. And by the time that pass hit Marchand, I mean, there was no turning back. You would like Marc-Andre Fleury to make a save there, but I don't pin that one on Marc-Andre Fleury because it's a perfect shot.
Yeah, I'll say this. How many times did they fan on shots and fan on passes and just leave the puck behind them without noticing they lost the puck? And just tiny little errors that they just weren't sharp. And it's expected when you look back at the situation and think, okay, so this team had two games to start the year that they wanted more than any team has ever wanted a regular season game in NHL history. They wanted those games.
Yep.
And they did exactly what they wanted. They steamrolled San Jose. Then they had 4 days off. And then they had the Eastern Conference champions come in, and they weren't sharp. The Golden Knights, in the first two games, everything was so sharp. And early against Boston, everything was sharp. That Riley Smith collection off of his skate and then roofs it. Like, I don't think it got enough attention how impressive that gathering of the pass and then immediate roofing of the pass. They were just so sharp. And then all of a sudden, Boston put the pressure on, and so many tiny little errors by the Golden Knights. But like I said, I don't think it's that big of a deal in the grand scheme of things.
Well, the entire sequence leading up to that Riley Smith goal was something to watch. You know what I mean? You've got William Karlsson kind of delaying up toward the blue line. You've got Riley Smith going hard to the far post. They almost scored there.
Yeah.
Like, they just missed that. And then Jonathan Marchessault, his puck retrieval, his ability to get in and force a turnover, force some pressure, and then a great pass out front. I do want to highlight Cody Glass simply for the play that he made on the Mark Stone goal.
Yep.
You have to give him credit for going back behind the net, engaging Charlie McAvoy, winning a puck battle, stealing the puck, getting it out to Pacioretty, who finds Stone. Like, that, yep. that is the play on that goal. Like, I know that the passing from Pacioretty to Stone and the finish, like, you want to talk about it, I get it. But the play that made that goal was Cody Glass behind the net, winning a board battle, winning a puck battle against Charlie McAvoy, a defenseman that got paid this summer.
Yeah, and not just that one, but Glass won a bunch of battles in the corners last night. He was coming away with pucks, and that was, prior to last night, that was my biggest criticism of Glass and his NHL play. I think he's phenomenal with his vision. I think his passing is great. His offensive game is great. I think defensively he's been solid. I think the biggest issue with him is he's not strong. I mean, he's 20 and he's a skinny kid and he's not strong. He goes into the corners against NHL players and gets out muscled, which is not surprising. But if you're Gerard Gallant and Cody Eakin's coming back and Alex Tuck's coming back and you're thinking of reasons to send, like, to not have Cody Glass in the lineup, that's one of them. He can't win puck battles. Last night, he won puck battles. So there goes that reason.
Do you think that the team he was playing kind of played into that? Now, the Boston Bruins, they are a veteran team. They've been around a long time. They know how to play the game the right way. But I wouldn't necessarily look at the Boston Bruins and say that they're an overly physical in the corners type of team.
Yeah.
They're fast. They're speedy. They're skilled. I mean, they've got players that can put a hurt on, McAvoy being one of them, Zdeno Chara being the other. But they're not known for being that tough to play against in the corners. Do you think that that had something to do with it?
Yeah, I do. I do. And there are going to be teams that Glass has trouble with in the corners, like the Ducks. Not a great team, but they're a bunch of huge guys who have literally done that for their entire life.
And not a great team. They're undefeated. What are you talking about?
Yeah, there's a ton of really good undefeated teams in the league that, like I think every team in the league that's undefeated right now, except for maybe Boston, is, like, not any good. Aren't the Red Wings undefeated, too?
I don't think the Red Wings have won or have lost a game.
I think the Red Wings may have more wins than they were projected to have for the entire season.
Yeah, I said that yesterday on the Insider Show. James Neal is a scoring machine.
Yeah, so this has been a weird NHL season to start the year.
I don't really know what to make of any of it, to be honest with you. Now, I talked a little bit about what we've learned so far from the Golden Knights after the first two games against the San Jose Sharks. And it would have probably been a little bit more interesting if San Jose went on to beat Anaheim and then they went on to beat Nashville. And then all of a sudden San Jose looks like they are, you know, what they were last year. But I think concerns about San Jose should be very, very real for that fan base. Like, this is a team that I think You're witnessing the actual close of a window. Like,
they've been outscored 17-5.
Burns has been awful.
They look bad.
So I'm concerned that maybe we're overvaluing San Jose going into this season. And then with the Golden Knights, I gotta see them play more teams. Like, it's so hard to make assessments after three games. You need 10, you need 12, you need 15, like, to really understand how good or how bad a team is. But there are trends that we can kind of look at over the course of the first three games. And you just wrote an article on every goal that was scored last night against the Golden Knights, and really every goal that's been scored this season. And turnovers are an area in which I think the Golden Knights need to be concerned and pay some attention to.
Yeah, so the story was kind of about how turnovers have been a double-edged sword for them, because they've been the reason they've won and they've been the reason they've lost. So the Golden Knights have 12 goals so far this season, 7 at even strength, 2 power play, and 3 shorthanded. Just ridiculous in itself. But so they've got 12 goals. Of those 12, 6 of them have come directly off of a turnover. And I'm not talking about, okay, they turned it over and then they went down into the offensive zone, passed it around, cycled it a little bit, and then scored. I'm talking turnover, pass, goal.
Right.
6 of the 12. That's pretty crazy. And it reminds me of the first season, because the first season, that forecheck is what made the Golden Knights so good, and especially the line of Carlson, Smith, and Marchessault. And they're the ones that have been doing it. You look at that October 2nd game against San Jose, first game of the season. Both of Riley Smith's goals in that game were directly off turnovers. One was William Carlson steals it from San Jose, passes it to Smith for a one-timer. The other one was shorthanded. Smith steals it and starts the rush, him and Carlson 2-on-0 goal. Marchessault's goal up in San Jose, he steals it from Erik Karlsson, throws it out to Shea Theodore. Shea Theodore fires it. He deflects it in. Last night, same thing, right off turnovers. But the other side of it is, they're turning the puck over too much. And you heard Gerard Gallant last night after the game said 3 of their 4 goals were directly because of us. We gift-wrapped them, was what Max Pacioretty said. And to me, the issue is Nate Schmidt being out of the lineup forces Shea Theodore to play with Braden McNabb. And it basically gives you one pairing that can move the puck out of its zone.
Mm-hmm.
With Nate Schmidt in the lineup, Schmidt and McNabb are great at moving the puck out of their zone. McNabb may not be the most offensively skilled guy, but when he gets the puck in his defensive zone, he makes good decisions, quick decisions, and gets it up to the forwards and lets them do their thing.
Right.
Nate Schmidt can skate around everyone. He's awesome in his own zone. So is Shea Theodore. When Shea Theodore is down on that second pairing with John Merrill, he becomes the puck mover. John right. Merrill can, if he gets in trouble, just give it to Shea, and Shea will get it out of the zone.
Sure.
What happens is when Nate Schmidt goes out, Shea Theodore moves up. Theodore and McNabb had no problems exiting their zone. But now Nick Holden and John Merrill cannot get the puck out of their zone because neither of them have the skills to do it. And they panic and they pass it to the other guy. And then it just puts that guy into a worse spot. And then he turns it over and it's a goal. Same issue with this bottom pairing, Derek Englund and Nick Hague. Nick Hague didn't really turn the puck over that much last night. And he's not getting a ton of criticism like Derek Englund is. But that's not fair, because multiple times when Derek Englund turned the puck over, it was because Nick Hague had the puck with no pressure on him whatsoever. And instead of finding someone up ice, he just passed it over to Derek Englund, who had a guy in his face, and then Englund panics, turns it over, and it's a goal. And yes, Englund looks bad, and that's the guy who gets the blame, but Hague set up Englund for failure, basically. And it's not just on the defenseman. I talked to Pacioretty after the game, and he's like, we're not giving them outlets. The forwards were not reloading. For those that don't know what reloading is, when your team gets the puck in the offensive zone, the tendency of forwards is to get the hell up the ice because you want to be the one to get to score.
Yeah, exactly.
And they leak out of the zone early instead of coming back to the puck, giving your defenseman options to throw it to. The example I used was the Holden turnover that resulted in the Krug goal, the slap shot.
Yep.
Holden gets the puck on the half boards. He's got plenty of time. There's not really much pressure on him. He's looking at Ryan Reeves. Ryan Reeves is open if he just comes back to Holden. The issue is Reeves kind of just drifts into defensive coverage. So now Holden doesn't have anywhere to go with the puck. He tries to go D to D. It gets intercepted. It gets thrown to Krug. He slap shots it, and then Reeves deflected that past Fleury for the goal. So on that play, Holden looks horrible, but if Reeves is doing what he's supposed to be doing on that play, it never happens.
And it's always interesting, because we talked about that on the postgame show last night. Like, we played the Pacioretty audio, and it's 5-man units up and down the ice. When the Golden Knights are playing well, forwards are available to defensemen, so they don't have to go D to D. Like, when you go D to D, unless you're faced with pressure that's overloaded on one side of the ice, D to D makes sense, because then you kind of relieve some of that pressure. But going D to D doesn't necessarily help you in the grand scheme of things when there's equal pressure up the ice, because all it does is allows an extra pass where you're not getting the puck out of your zone.
Yeah.
Honestly. So it puts you at a disadvantage. It allows the opposition to come to get on you quicker, and therefore you start to compound all those issues. Now, I don't know that I pin a whole hell of a lot of what happened last night on the forwards, especially when it comes to, you know, that Derek Englund turnover at the blue line.
Like, that was brutal.
Chip it out.
He had Mark Stone sitting there. Either chip it off the boards or saucer it over. Don't throw it directly into Patrice Bergeron's stick.
Yeah, and I mean, like, let's give Derek Englund a little bit of an out. It's Patrice Bergeron. Like, he knows what he's doing.
He's amazing.
He understands the angles. He's got a great stick. Like, we get it. But the play is chipping the puck out. And as much as I hate chipping the puck out, that is a custom-built scenario for when you need to just get the puck out of your zone. You just have to, because you don't have any coverage behind you. And that's no disrespect to Nick Hague, but, like, he's not going to be able to play that two-on-one effectively. He just isn't.
That's his second NHL game.
Exactly. So I feel like when you look at the San Jose games, five-man units up and down the ice. Everywhere. Every single situation. You don't have to go D-to-D because you have your forwards as outlets. You have your centers coming through the middle of the ice, and they've got their coverage. Like, I didn't see enough of that against Boston, and I think a lot of that has to do with how good Boston is, how fast they are, how quickly they close. But you bring up kind of the main point about all of this. Without Nate Schmidt, the Golden Knights have one pair that can move the puck effectively out of their own zone. That's it. That's one. And with Nate Schmidt, they've got two and maybe half of one for their third pair.
They have maybe half of one for their third pair. That's hoping Nick Hague develops into, because, like, right now it's a second NHL game. He hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been good. You hope Nick Hague, by halfway through the season, he is a puck moving defenseman, right? I mean, he's got offensive skills. He in the AHL, he was great at it. You hope that he becomes a fourth, because that you've got Schmidt, McNabb, Theodore. You hope Hague becomes that fourth one. You hope. We don't know for sure, but that's the hope.
I wonder about the foot speed right now. Like, legitimately wonder about it. Now, and I'm not just talking about foot speed to be able to skate around players to skate the puck out of your own zone. I'm talking about foot speed to get back to pucks.
The faster you get back to the puck, the more time you have to survey the ice to make a decision. The slower you get to it, the faster the forechecker is on you.
Yeah, I mean, if you get there late, you have no options.
Yeah.
The only option is what we saw yesterday, where Nick Hague puts Derek Englund in a tough spot. Derek Englund turns over the puck, and the puck's in the back of the net.
Yeah. This last 10 minutes sounds like the sky is falling. The Golden Knights are still really freaking good. But when you have a team that's this good, and, like, they're going to make the playoffs. This team is going to make the playoffs. You try to find where the pitfall is, because if this team doesn't win a Stanley Cup, there's going to be a reason for it.
Sure.
So basically what I'm trying to do this whole season is, what is the issue if there's one, and how do they fix it? And to me, through only three games, that appears to be, if there's going to be an Achilles heel to this team, it's getting the puck out of the zone when it's not Nate Schmidt, Shea Theodore, or Braden McNabb with the puck.
Are we seeing... We talked about the window closing for San Jose. We talked about Brent Burns kind of coming back down to earth, not looking very good. Are we seeing a little bit of the cracks for Derek Englund so far this season? Like, his ice time's way, way down.
Way down.
Way down. I mean, are we heading toward potentially, and maybe when healthy, maybe when Nate Schmidt's back into the lineup, potentially not having Derek Englund suit up when healthy?
I could see that. It's Gerard Gallant is the biggest Derek Englund fan on earth. I mean, he's the reason Derek Englund has been so heavily relied on for the last two seasons. He's probably a huge part of why McPhee brought him back. I would guess that Gerard Gallant asked McPhee to bring him back. This isn't inside information. I would just guess, just based on his thoughts on Derek Englund. If Gerard Gallant is lowering England's ice time, and this isn't a couple minutes, it's drastically.
Yeah.
He's clearly contemplating it himself. So I think that's fair to wonder if England could find himself out of the lineup soon.
So here's another question that I looked at the ice time last night. Mark Stone over 20 minutes. Carlson, Marchessault, Smith, I think we're either at 20 minutes or just above 20 minutes. You were trailing for nearly 40 minutes of game time. The only two lines really that were going every single time they were on the ice were the top two lines. There were moments, there were flashes for Stastny playing with Peary and Zikov, but they weren't as frequent, they weren't as consistent as the top two lines.
I thought the bottom six was a nightmare.
Yeah, it wasn't great. It wasn't great. And we'll talk about that here in a minute. But my question and what I'm thinking here is, the Golden Knights could afford to play those top two lines more when they are trailing than just 20 minutes a game. Like, I understand that you don't necessarily want to run anybody into the ground game three. Like, I get it. But when you're trailing for 40 minutes of the game, I'd like to see Mark Stone up at around 23, 24 minutes a night. Like, you put the players on the ice that are going to score goals.
I will say it didn't get to the 23, 24 minutes. But late in that game, last 10 minutes, the last half of the third period, the only time the top two lines weren't on the ice was when they were so exhausted that he absolutely had to put the third line out there. And it was top line, second line, top line, second line, top line, second line for that last 10 minutes.
And I understand that. And, like, I would like to see in those situations Gerard Gallant go with Peary, Stastny, Stone. Like, double shift Mark Stone. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I
don't think it's at all possible to just roll two lines through an entire 20-minute period.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. I understand that. But what I am saying is you get Mark Stone out on the ice every second or third shift. And you could do that. Like, I understand that, like, you want to try to keep things as fresh as possible, but he's your game breaker. He's your difference maker. You put him on the ice with as many times as you can when you're trailing, because once you tie it up, you don't have to go to that. You don't have to continue to do that. I just felt like Stone should be leading all forwards in ice time by a lot when this team is trailing and trying to get back into a game.
Yeah, I can buy that. The biggest issue and the reason we're having to say this is because the third line was terrible.
Okay.
I mean, if the third line is good, then we're not even having this conversation, because then you can roll three lines, and if the third line's playing well, then awesome.
I completely agree with you. So let's talk about that third line.
I felt so bad for Paul Stastny. At one point early in the third period, I watched Paul Stastny. No, sorry, this was late in the second period. I just watched Paul Stastny for a shift.
Yeah.
And this guy was fighting in front of the net to get position, to screen the goalie, to try to create havoc, to create traffic. Man, he was battling. Like, two Boston defensemen were just, like, double-teaming him, and he was fighting as hard as he could. And you could just tell how frustrating it is.
Yeah.
And this guy, he's the ultimate team player. He's willing to be dropped off of the most talented line on the team down to play with Peary and Zikov to try to elevate their games. It worked for the first two games. It didn't work last night. I mean, that's not to say it won't work going forward. Boston is one of the best teams in the NHL.
Sure.
But if that line isn't working, it's a problem.
So Brandon Peary had a night to forget.
It was awful. He turned the puck over.
Penalties.
Fanned on shots. He created. He committed penalties.
Where is that coming from? Like,
I don't know.
Now, we have all talked about some of the shortcomings with Brandon Peary. Getting shots on net is not one of them. Like, that's why you're here. Legitimately, why you are here. And I see him fan, and I see him shoot into skates all the time, and I'm trying to understand why.
It's been a rough start. And Zikov didn't make the mistakes that Peary made,
but
he was just invisible. Like, he just didn't do anything
the
on
thing
the ice.
That the thing that I've noticed through three games with Valentin Zikov is, why are you deferring? Why, like, you don't need to do that.
You have a nice wraparound attempt that I thought he was going to beat Rask with, but he got over.
The thing that I like about Zikov right now over Peary is, Boston game kind of thrown out, he does win board battles.
Yes, he does.
He does a lot of good things down low that buy time for his teammates to get into position and figure out what they need to do in order to get scoring chances.
And he's a good forechecker.
And he's a really good forechecker. He's been okay on the back check. He's been okay defensively. But what I want to see from Valentin Zikov is simple. Shoot.
Yeah.
Your release is the weirdest, most ridiculous release I've ever seen. Like, legitimately, it arrives quick, like the puck arrives fast, but it's like a lazy, weird, hard to telegraph, hard to understand where the puck's going to come from release. Get that on net. Just more often, get it on net, because you're going to fool a goalie here and there.
Yeah.
And when you're trying to get too cute and you're trying to pass a little too much, I think that's when you start to get into those situations where Zikov turns the puck over and something that's promising all of a sudden becomes nothing, and then you start to lose those little things that he does in the other facets of the game that make him valuable.
Yeah. Peary needs to get the puck on the net. Zikov needs to get the puck on the net. Stastny is there to pass. He's not going to shoot.
Yeah.
Last night, None, like Peary was trying to shoot it but couldn't. Zykov wouldn't shoot it, and Paul Stastny doesn't shoot it. So that line is doing nothing.
So, biggest question I have for you, or the biggest question that I have in general is, can Cody Eakin play the wing?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to find out. It's
is it automatic that if Cody Eakin is healthy, Cody Glass is not the second line center?
No, I don't think it's automatic.
I don't think it should be.
I would hope not. That line's been fantastic.
I would go Eakin, Stastny, Zykov right now.
I think I would, too. I don't know if Gerard Gallant would. The one thing we do know is there was some thought like, man, if this team's playing really well when Eakin comes back, maybe they hold him out a little longer, because mm-hmm. that's what Gerard Gallant has done in the past. Like, if my team's winning, I'm not changing the lineup.
Right.
We've cleared that up yesterday after morning skate. He said, when Cody Eakin's healthy, he's in the lineup.
Oh,
so
for sure.
That part we've cleared up. It's just who's coming out. Is it going to be a wing or is it Glass? And I would hope it's not Glass, but who the hell knows?
I think you give Paul Stastny, Cody Eakin, and see what happens.
It would help.
Oh, for sure.
And we talked about how bad the bottom six was, but they're missing the two best bottom six players on the team right now.
Oh, for sure. And imagine if Cody Eakin can play the wing, and you've got Eakin, Stastny, Tuck as your third line. That's a good third line.
That's great.
That should be a third line that will chip in offensively, is not going to be a liability defensively. In fact, it'd probably be one of your better defensive lines simply because of Stastny and because of Eakin. But I guess the main question I have, kind of piggybacking off that, you've got Cody Eakin. Can he play the wing? If Ryan Reeves is playing 7 minutes and 34 seconds a night.
Is that what he played last night?
Yeah.
Yikes.
What's the point? Like, legit, like, and this is not a shit on Ryan Reeves moment. Like, I'm not doing that, but what is the point, legitimately, if you are trailing in a game and you're trying to get back into a game and you've got legitimately two guys on the ice in Carrier and Reeves that can't play more than 7 minutes of effective hockey? What is the point?
Yeah, it's going to come down to will Gerard Gallant try to put the four best lines that can score on the ice? Or does he, and he's not alone. This isn't a Gerard Gallant only thing. This is the majority of coaches in
it's
NHL.
It's the NHL. Yeah, it's you need to have a fourth line that plays
Line is to injure the other team, basically. The entire reason the fourth line exists, I don't want to hear any other, the reason William Carrier and Ryan Reeves have roster spots is because coaches believe the fourth line's job is to hurt the other team. That's the only reason they're on the ice.
You know, the Boston Bruins have a fourth line that can play hockey, and they win hockey games. Like, I feel like it's a disservice to Tomáš Nosek.
I thought Nosek actually had some moments last night where he still plays well, even though he doesn't have a lot on the
wing. He does, but like, here's
his pass to Carrier on Carrier's goal was freaking,
I know,
amazing.
It was great, but here's my issue. Tomáš Nosek in the American League, the AHL, top line center. He gets to Vegas. First 2 years, he's on the wing. He's not playing his natural position. He doesn't seem comfortable. It's only when he's playing center that he actually looks comfortable, that he starts to become noticeable. You mean to tell me that if you put Valentin Zykov on one side of Tomáš Nosek, and you got to have your checker, so Will Carrier or Ryan Reeves on the other, that line can't do a little bit more damage than they've done?
You'd think.
I mean, you need to surround Nosek with guys that can put the puck in the back of the net. Like, he's got offensive upside, and he's really good defensively. So why wouldn't you have four lines that can actually threaten to score?
The other answer is, I mean, and this moves Nosek to the wing, which he's not comfortable, but is Eakin on that fourth line with Nosek and one of those checkers, Reeves and Carrier?
Yeah, I don't see. That's the thing. I would rather see if Cody Eakin can play the wing than move Nosek, because we know that Nosek becomes invisible on the wing.
He's not as good on the wing.
He isn't. And so my thought process is Cody Eakin is good enough to be effective at center or wing. Like, I think he'll be just fine. He's a smart enough player.
Yeah.
He thinks the game at a good level to the point where I don't think he's going to be lost playing the wing, especially if he's got Stastny and eventually Tuck as his line mates. Like, as long as Tuck doesn't play the left.
Yeah, no left for Tuck, please.
Gotta make God, sure Cody Eakin's playing the left. But, like, I don't know, man. I sit there and I think to myself, especially when I look at that ice time, like, why are you suiting a guy up for 7 minutes?
Yeah, it's and Reeves hasn't, I don't know if it's he's not as fast as he was last year, or if it's just been San Jose and Boston have really slick defensemen, which is true. I mean, San Jose's defensemen haven't been that great, but it's not easy to get a body on Burns and Carlson and McAvoy. They're very shifty and they skate well and they're hard to get a body on. But Reeves and Carrier really haven't been delivering, though. They haven't been finishing those checks that, like, that's what makes them good, right?
Right.
They go out there, they intimidate the other team, they make them look over their shoulder, they forecheck the hell out of them, and they finish their checks, and that's their job. And, like, they really haven't been able to. I mean, Reeves did have that one big hit that knocked Ferraro out of the game.
Yeah.
But other than that, those two have been kind of rendered incapable of doing, like, what the one thing that they're really good at, which is knocking the crap out of guys.
So why in the world did William Karlsson pass the puck to Will Carrier? Like, legitimately, I don't understand it. So it's a shorthanded opportunity. William Karlsson makes a great move to go outside inside. He's in the slot.
I know.
In the slot. There's no one between him and Tuukka Rask, and he elects to pass off to the wing to William Carrier.
To the guy who 2 days ago just said, "I don't even look at where I'm shooting."
Yes, yes. The quote from Carrier was, "Yeah, I just closed my eyes and picked a corner." And then Dan Duva said, "But it went five hole." And he's like, "Yeah, if I don't know where I'm shooting, neither does the goalie." And that works against Martin Jones because he's bad, but it doesn't work against Tuukka Rask.
William Karlsson's vision. And it wasn't, it's not just that play. Sometimes his vision is too good for his own good. Like, he will have a chance and he sees, oh my God, that guy, if I get it to him, it's a tap-in goal, when he should have just shot it himself.
Well, we talked about William Karlsson's shooting percentage year one being unsustainable. His shooting percentage right now is very much sustainable if he keeps passing and deferring to Will Carrier.
Yeah.
Like, and again, it's no disrespect to Will Carrier. William Karlsson scored 43 goals in an NHL season. Shoot the damn puck.
Yeah.
Do that. Do more of that. I don't know if it's a confidence thing. I don't know if it's, like you said, he sees plays that he thinks should work out, and then more often than not, the play that's in front of you is the play that you should make. The extra pass is always going to result in a deflection, or it's not going to work out, or you're just going to plain fuck it up because the guy you're passing to is not going to really understand or see the game the way that you do. I just want to see him take the puck to the net a little bit more and shoot the puck a little bit more.
To Carlson's credit, though, look at the place just through three games. That pass, that ridiculous pass, Braden McNabb's shorthanded goal,
sure,
was him threading it through like four guys to him. The 2-on-0 with Riley Smith.
Sure.
Riley Smith passes that over to him, and 99.9% of human beings on Earth are one-timing that.
Right. No.
Karlsson,
for sure,
passes it back, and if he passes that back and Smith like peels off and isn't ready for it, everyone's going to roast Karlsson for passing that. But instead, it's an easy tap-in goal. So like that extra pass has worked.
Okay. Here's where I'm going to try to play devil's advocate. The pass to Braden McNabb, there was no clear lane for William Karlsson to shoot.
Fair.
He was along the boards. He spotted McNabb jumping in. That's the play that was there to be made. With the Riley Smith 2-on-0, the fact that Riley Smith made that first pass over to William Karlsson so early after crossing the blue line.
It wasn't that early,
it
though.
Was pretty early.
Karlsson was in
plenty,
the blue paint when he passed
plenty,
it over to Smith.
There was plenty of time for that return pass, is what I'm saying. Like,
it was tight.
I understand what you're saying.
Smith one-timed it into the net from like 6 inches in front of the goal line.
Yeah, but Riley Smith has been really good through the first three games. So, like, I can understand the thought process there. You have a chance if you're Martin Jones to make a save on a one-timer from William Karlsson after that pass. You have no chance with that with that extra pass.
Yeah, but Riley Smith. But that extra pass is a very
risky one.
Risky pass.
Sure, I get it.
Like, that's not an easy pass to execute.
I'll give you that one. I'm not giving you the Braden McNabb.
What about the one where the Riley Smith's first goal, where Carlson's forechecking and the puck bounces off the net and goes right to him, and he's just sitting there looking at Jones, and instead of shooting it, the extra pass, he throws it over to Smith, easy one-timer into
the
net.
Well, he doesn't have a good angle. Like, it's not a great shooting angle.
I thought he had a good.
I mean, it's Martin Jones. Like, no shot is a bad shot. But the point that I'm making is, like, he was in pretty tight. The play to me was the pass across.
It was a better play
for sure. I'm just saying, when William Karlsson is in a situation where he's in the slot and there's literally no one in front of him and the goalie, it's just him and the goalie.
The move to get into that slot, though, that dangle around
phenomenal.
The front,
it was
like,
great.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No, it was great. And then he passes to William Carrier. Yeah. Like, don't do that anymore. Do not do that. So, Mark Stone's played a lot on the penalty kill.
Yes, he has a ton.
What are your thoughts on Mark Stone penalty killing?
I'm fine with it. After watching, like, early in the season, before the season started, we both said we'd rather him
5-on-5 and power play.
But he kills penalties very similar to the way William Karlsson kills penalties, which is okay with me. I don't want Mark Stone killing penalties the way Belmar and Cody Eakin kill penalties, which is laying in front of shots, because he could kill 40 penalties in a row. One shot hits him in the wrist, and those 40 penalty kills were not worth.
Sure,
100%. So, like, it's risk versus reward. But if he can stay upright, not stand in front of pucks, get the hell out of the way when they're shooting it. If it's a goal, so be it. That's better than it hitting you. He's been really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And if your best player is a really good penalty killer and he can do it without putting himself in danger, throw him out there. I trust Mark Stone's hockey IQ enough to, after watching him kill penalties, I'm perfectly fine with him killing penalties all year.
If he never lays down to block a shot, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
The minute he decides that that's what he wants to do.
Unless it's in the playoffs, that should not be happening.
Yeah, never again. Do not do it. So the Golden Knights have 3 games in 4 nights. So they've got they're at Arizona, home against Calgary, and then in LA.
Yep.
Is Malcolm Subban ever going to play?
Oh, he's playing one of those.
You think so?
If he doesn't, I'm going to raise hell. If Malcolm Subban
does, what does you raising hell look like? I'm curious.
I don't know. I'll write a sternly written letter. No, I'll write a last season, I wrote a headline. History suggests the Golden Knights should lighten Marc-Andre Fleury's workload.
Mm-hmm.
I still believe that. I still believe the NHL is, in 5 or 6 years, maybe a little longer, the thought of playing a goalie 60 games will be laughable. And we're all going to look back and think, man, these idiots were playing these goalies 70 games. What are they doing? It's going to be a league where goalies are used by committee. Not 50-50, but closer to 50-50 than they ever have been. And I think, and you look at it, last year I made the argument, what two goalies were in the Stanley Cup final?
Jordan Binnington and Tuukka Rask.
And neither of them played 50 games.
Jordan Binnington, I don't think. What did he have? 30 starts?
Well, he got called up late.
But he had 30 starts. But again,
he was fresh in the playoffs,
exactly.
And he played phenomenally. Tuukka Rask had a great backup goalie, got tons of rest throughout the year, had a couple injuries that also. And what happened? He was the reason the Boston Bruins made the Stanley Cup final.
Sure.
Because he was amazing, because he was fresh. Just like Holtby the year before that, and just like Murray the year before that, and just like every goalie who's won the Stanley Cup in the last 10 years.
Can I just say last night I turned to Tyler Bischoff about midway through the third period, and I'm like, how in the hell did the St. Louis Blues beat the Boston Bruins? Like,
that's
legitimately. I have no idea how that happened.
Their entire run was ridiculous.
Kind of insane. Where do you play Malcolm? And the reason I ask is, we know how good he is at home, but the home game is against the Calgary Flames, and we know how bad he is against Calgary.
Yeah. So Subban has had two nightmare games for the Golden Knights, and they were both in Calgary. So that team has lit him up twice.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I still think I'd play him at T-Mobile against the Flames.
I agree.
Versus on the road against the Kings. For one, the Kings have been playing better this season. They're not going to be good. They're not going to be a playoff team, but they may not be the complete bottom feeder, like, gimme game that they were last year. I think they're going to be a little better.
I'm going to save that for Jesse Was Wrong Part 3.
What, they're going to be
Kings
terrible?
Kings make the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, maybe they will. Maybe they'll surprise. Like so far, all those bottom feeders in the Pacific Division have looked drastically improved.
Yeah.
Ducks, Kings, Oilers, they all look better. So I think I'd play him at home. He's been good at home. I think I like the idea of playing him on the first night of a back-to-back instead of the second night, because last season you saw what happened when you played him on the second night of a back-to-back. The team in front of him wasn't very good. He wasn't able to make the spectacular saves to save their asses. Who can make the spectacular saves to save their asses?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The Hall of Famer that is also in net. Let Fleury make those saves. If you're going to have two games and one of them, you know your team's going to be at a disadvantage because they're on the second half of back-to-back, put the Hall of Famer in that game.
Couldn't agree more. I want to say that I want to see Malcolm Subban play at T-Mobile Arena just because, A, he's been very, very good there. B, it's the first leg of a back-to-back like you mentioned. And C, Matthew Tkachuk exists. And like, I don't want that to sound ridiculous, but Matthew Tkachuk is going to be on top of whichever goalie is playing in that game. And let's be honest, you don't want Marc-Andre Fleury taking unnecessary bumps. And I'm not saying that Malcolm Subban should be that guy, that he should be the fall guy, but like you need to protect Marc-Andre Fleury from having to play those physically taxing games. And there are different types of games in the NHL. A 19 save shutout where you're really not facing any traffic and guys aren't in your face all night is easier to recover from than a war against the Calgary Flames and Matthew Tkachuk in your face for 25 plus minutes the entire game.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that, but that's a great point. I mean, like you said, you don't want Subban to get hurt.
No.
But if a goalie injury occurs, Subban, we'll just have to play Fleury a little more than we wanted to. If Fleury gets hurt, it's catastrophic for your season.
And that's not to suggest that you put Malcolm Subban out there knowing that that potential exists. I'm just saying, understand who your opponent is and understand what the potential downfalls to playing Marc-Andre Fleury in that game when you don't necessarily need to. And you've got to fit Malcolm into this four-day window anyway.
Yeah, and Fleury and Tkachuk had their back and forth.
Well, that's
right?
That
was,
I mean,
like
the last time
Calgary played in Vegas, it was a...
Those guys have gone after each other a couple of times. So I just think that you look at the opponent, you look at the style of hockey that they play, you look at how difficult of a game that might be for Marc-Andre Fleury from a recovery standpoint, I just think it makes too much sense to play Malcolm Subban against Calgary. It's going to suck because he's got some demons against the Calgary Flames, but let's be honest, maybe he needs to overcome them. Like, maybe he needs to go out there and prove that he can beat the Calgary Flames, that he can kind of overcome that team that has lit him up before. And maybe that's a step in the right direction in his maturation process.
Yeah, and not only that, but like when you've got a team that's lit you up, like you said, demons, maybe the fact that it's at home and the fact that it's the first night of a back-to-back give Subban confidence that, okay, this team's lit me up, but it's always been on the second night of a back-to-back, and it's always been on the road. I'm in my home arena where I'm comfortable. My team is 100%. We're ready to go. Like, I'm going to prove that those were the reasons that they lit me up and not because Calgary just has my number. That confidence going into the game can help. I think he should definitely play one of those two, either Kings or Flames. And if it was me, it'd be Flames. As long as they play him in one of them, I'll be happy.
Okay.
Just play him in one of these three games.
So we reached out to you fair listeners about mailbag questions, and you hit us with a few. So we're going to go through some of those, and then I'm going to ask Jesse why he thinks he knows how to tape a stick better than Marc-Andre Fleury. Inside joke. Anyway, Stephen Patak, at Patak Attack. When guys get back, there's no way you send Glass down, right? The kid is only going to get better as the season goes on. We had talked about this before the season even started, that a full year of Cody Glass learning at the NHL level will make him a better player by the end of it. I don't see any reason to believe otherwise after three games at the NHL level. He's gotten better every single game to me. I think in order to have the best team available to you come April, Cody Glass needs to be a mainstay on this roster.
After watching him for three games, I feel even better about that. I think at this point, okay, so like right now, the reason Cody Glass is playing with Mark Stone and Max Pacioretty is because they're trying to put a rookie in a good situation, and they're hoping those guys will carry him. Right now, after watching him for three games, I think by the end of the season, Cody Glass will be on that line because he belongs on that line, and he is helping carry Stone and Pacioretty. Not that he's going to be better than those guys, but like he is going to be one of the best players on this team by the end of the season, in my opinion. So, yeah, I think he should stay up.
So, good buddy at Hockey Llama essentially talked about the inability to move the puck out of your own zone with more than just one defensive pair. Trade. Do you make a trade now?
What do you trade, though? Like, that's the thing.
His suggestions, Mike Green, if you could get some salary retained, Kevin Shattenkirk would be a fit if Tampa would let him go for a second rounder.
Well, Tampa's never going to give up Shattenkirk because the only reason they got him was because the Rangers bought him out and they're not paying him crap. So
right.
They have a – and I don't even think Shattenkirk's that good. But the Lightning got him on a crazy cheap deal, so I don't – that
I don't think no Shattenkirk's an option.
Mike Green, okay. But, like, to me, what are the Golden Knights going to give up in order to get a defenseman? Because they've already traded so many first-round picks. They're – prospect pool is not the deepest in the NHL. They can't just keep going all in, or in 5 years you're going to be in trouble.
I agree with you.
So that means you have to trade NHL pieces, and where are these extra NHL pieces to trade?
Here's a name I'm going to throw out there that's going to be a little bit crazy. Alex Pietrangelo. And I'm saying it for one reason. Still doesn't have a deal.
He would be phenomenal.
He won the Stanley Cup. He was the captain of the St. Louis Blues. Still doesn't have a deal. Like, the only reason you don't have a deal is because you don't want to have a deal. Or St. Louis doesn't want to have a deal. They make the trade for Justin Falk, who plays the right side, right-handed shot defenseman. He got a deal.
Yeah.
So if Pietrangelo is available, then maybe that makes sense. However, it's going to cost you
a lot.
A lot. Unless that's a deal, a rental that you make at the deadline. But
you have to trade salary in order to... open up space for him.
And I get that, but I don't think you make a trade now. I think you hope Nate Schmidt's back soon.
Yeah, you hope.
Four weeks at the most, right? And then from there, you assess the rest of your defensemen. Because ideally, Pietrangelo is going to be a right shot defenseman. You've got Nate Schmidt and you've got Shea Theodore as your best two right side defenseman. If you're moving on from Derek Englund, you could do a lot worse than Alex Pietrangelo.
Well, he'd be amazing. It's just what you have to give up to acquire him and how much weak, because it's going to be a forward more than likely, a couple forwards or a pick and a forward. How much weaker are you making your, because your forward depth is amazing. How much weaker are you making that to add Pietrangelo? An older guy who you're going to have to sign to a contract.
For sure.
And like,
no, I agree. Unless it's a strict rental.
And then in that case,
you're going for it.
Yeah. I mean, there's no argument. Like, this team is significantly better and has a much better chance of winning the Stanley Cup with Alex Pietrangelo on it. Obviously, he's amazing. So if they make that deal, it's like, all right, but you better win the cup now because you're going to be the Sharks in a couple of years.
Probably not a couple of years. All right, Jake O'Hara. Are the Knights putting the rookie VGK defenseman in a position to succeed? Are there D pairing changes that should be made to help them out? Right now, I don't know that there's much of a choice, to be honest with you. Like, with Nate Schmidt in the lineup, we already talked about it. That makes everything kind of fall into place a little bit more. But right now, you've got two legitimate guys that can move the puck out of their own zone. To split them up, and And in fairness to Braden McNabb, he can move the puck out of his own zone, but it's not so much that. It's just the decisions that he makes to set up Shea Theodore to move the puck out of his own zone that are very much important.
If now, you put McNabb with
Nick Holden,
all of a sudden McNabb doesn't look as good.
Right. And that's the concern. Like, if you try to split that up a little bit, you try to split, say you go McNabb, Holden, and then you go Merrill, Theodore.
You still have Hague with England. That doesn't solve the problem.
There's more balance there, but it doesn't make you any better.
And,
I don't think.
And the issue, the question was, like, are you setting up your rookies to succeed? That's still leaving Hague with England. Who are you going to put Hague with? Theodore? That sounds like a nightmare.
When do we see Jimmy Schultz?
Could be the next game.
Thursday?
Gerard Gallant refuses to change his lineup off of a win, so they finally lost. So now he can kind of assess. Like, I feel like Gerard Gallant doesn't even consider making roster moves unless they lose. Now that they... So, like, people were asking, like, does Schultz get in? And this is, like, before the loss? Absolutely not. He's not changing the lineup. But now that the Golden Knights have lost, it's going to be interesting. I'm going straight from here to practice. It'll be interesting to see if he gives Schultz a chance.
Nick Craig said, the only one I had was the Eakin one coming back, so I'm sure everyone is asking. So I'll just say, I love the podcast, guys. Can't wait for the next one, so thank you for that.
Appreciate it.
Bartolo Colon.
Ah, that's my guy.
Yeah, he's got some good ones. Is Cody Glass going to be 2C for the entire season? Should he be? I don't know, but yes.
Should he be? Yes. Will he be? Have no idea.
Yeah, exactly. He also asked, wouldn't last night have been a good time to use Malcolm Subban? He's been great at T-Mobile. Fleury just played 3 high-emotion games against the Sharks. Out of conference opponent, now it's either Fleury for 4 in a row out of the gate or Malcolm against a division opponent on the road. We kind of talked about that. I would much rather see, and you and I have just said it, Malcolm Subban play at home against Calgary. We understand that it's Calgary, but we also understand that Malcolm Subban is lights out at T-Mobile Arena.
Yeah, and also, Fleury played 2 games against the Sharks, but they had like 3 days off before this one, so I think Fleury should have played that game.
Why, this is at NAC VGK or VGK NAC, why did Jesse tell Fleury how to wrap his stick?
I'm not even going to dignify that with an answer. That didn't happen.
Is it just Chris Chapman making shit up?
Chris Chapman just... His knowledge of hockey is so little that he can't figure out what he's actually listening to in a locker room. Fleury and I were discussing the rainbow tape on the stick, and I was saying that I wish they'd make a goalie rainbow tape so that it would fit his stick better. It definitely was not a discussion on how he should tape his stick.
There it is, folks. He also went on to ask, with the team as it was last night, no Schmidt, no Tuck, I'm going to put no Eakin also, in a 7-game series, how do you see it faring against a team like the Bruins?
Say it again.
So this team, the team that played last night for the Golden Knights, without Schmidt, without Tuck, without Eakin, how do you see that team faring in a 7-game series against a team like the Boston Bruins?
I think they could win it. Like I said, like from the beginning, I think the Golden Knights, if you look at all like how the game played out, a few bounces here, a few bounces there, they win that game. They outplayed the Bruins according to all the analytics. I wouldn't say the Golden Knights should win against Boston, but I think that's a really close series. It's a good, it's a toss-up series against 2 really good teams. So
I mean, they were 1 goal short. They had 1 goal disallowed, and Max Pacioretty hit the post.
Yeah.
So, I mean, while we have taken an overly pessimistic view of last night's game, as I think we probably should, because everyone was flying high after the San Jose games, this team's unbeatable, they're going to be great, blah, blah, blah. Like, turnovers are a problem. Puck management was an issue in the game. And while you can look to, well, there's no Nate Schmidt, there's no Alex Tuck, like, those things will improve when those guys get back in the lineup. Same with Cody Eakin. The reality is that's your lineup for at least the next couple of games. You've got to figure out ways to play your game and win hockey games. And managing the puck is pretty basic. Like, Gerard Gallant's not going to be happy with the puck management from last night's game. And I don't think that anyone necessarily should be, because you're shooting yourself in the foot there.
Yeah, and the other reason we're overly pessimistic, and like, I agree, we have been. Like, this team's still really good.
Yeah, they're really good,
they
guys.
Played really well last night. They're going to be in the play. The reason we're being pessimistic, and the reason I'm going to be kind of picking this team apart throughout the season with my stories is because how good they are. It's boring to write every day, man, this team is good. They're going to win a bunch of games and they're going to go to the playoffs and they could go on a run. We know that. Right now we're trying to figure out if this team doesn't win the Stanley Cup, why?
Yeah.
And right now the most obvious reason for why they wouldn't win the Stanley Cup is what we've talked about for the last 45 minutes.
Defense, bottom six.
Yes.
Okay. At Party Purdue, or hashtag Night Train.
Yeah.
This is great. Did playing the Sharks approximately 90 times in a row cause the Golden Knights to be unprepared to face an NHL team?
That's funny, but I thought the Knights played fine last night. I mean, like I said, they outshot, outchanced, out high dangered, out gold expected goals for against the Bruins.
I'm just going to say yes.
Yes.
Yes. Michael Perkins, who needs to be in bobblehead form? I really want a Gallant bobblehead.
Ooh, I would like that. I'm all about the bobbleheads.
Yeah, I'm all for the bobbleheads too.
They need to make a Fleury bobblehead too. They do have Fleury bobbleheads out there, but it's by some company that made them. It's not an actual like in-game giveaway. You'd think Fleury would be the first one to get one, so we need to get Fleury bobblehead.
Steve LaRusso, third line is not working. What changes do you see when Tuck and Eakin return? I think we've talked about it. I would like to see Cody Eakin, when he returns, flank Paul Stastny and either Valentin Zhikov or Brandon Peary. I'd like to see Zhikov be the guy because I feel like Brandon Peary's just kind of lost whatever mojo he had when he came up last year. And I think maybe seeing a couple of games from the press box will make him realize that he's got maybe a little bit more time or there are better plays to make. Sometimes players need that in order to get their scoring touch back.
Yeah, I agree. And when Tuck and Eakin are back, I could see Stastny, Eakin, Tuck. That's an awesome third line. And then maybe both Zhikov and Peary play on the fourth line with Nosek. And you've got a scoring fourth line. Maybe.
You are.
I know, that's crazy. It's way out there.
Crazy.
Score on the fourth line. I know it's wild, but maybe.
Timothy Hansford, what is a realistic expectation for Stone this season? It's one thing to be 2 points a game against the Sharks, but against the Bruins, is his ceiling 80 points, 90 points more?
I mean, he's been awesome. He's on pace for 2 points a night. I don't think he's going to continue. He's not going to score 160 points, but I think Stone can approach 90, 100 points. Absolutely.
We talked about this in the offseason, I think.
His offense has been so impressive.
It was either the offseason or it was on a Golden Knights Insider show. I'm not 100% sure, but Mark Stone will win the Hart Trophy if he scores 100 points.
Yes.
He will also win the Selke.
Yes.
Because you have to score a bunch of points, I guess, to be the best defensive forward in the game.
Yeah.
And be a center.
I know. But if Mark Stone tops 100 points, he's winning the Hart Trophy.
That hockey dude said, Revo looks more than a step slow this year. Time to give him a few days off when Eakin comes back?
I don't disagree that he looks a little slow. I kind of mentioned it earlier, and I don't know if it's because he's slow or if it's just because the way he's reading the plays, but he hasn't been able to get his body on guys the way he normally does.
No, he's not initiating that contact, and his game is predicated on him getting in on the forecheck, creating that contact, creating separation, making a turnover, and then getting the puck to somebody that can score.
Yeah, and it just hasn't happened so far. But it's three games.
Andrew Choi, your thoughts on Peary after last night?
Bad.
That about covers it. Sir Stoffington. These are so awesome, man. What do you think were the biggest positives from last night's game that we can and should continue to focus on going into Arizona tomorrow? I thought for times the forecheck was really good for the Golden Knights. They were creating some turnovers. They were creating a lot of time and space and opportunities in the offensive zone. Finish would have been something that I'd like to have seen a bit more of. We talked about Cody Glass's play in the corners and his ability to kind of create plays out of nothing in the offensive zone. I think that's a positive. Those are mine.
I think the top six was phenomenal. You look at the on-ice numbers for Marchessault, Carlson, and Smith, and they are great, especially considering they were playing against Boston's top line for a lot of that, and they dominated. It was just when Vegas's bottom six got on the ice, it was a disaster, and Boston took advantage. So I'd say the top six was good. The puck movement is still, through three games, the puck movement for this team has been phenomenal. Almost, like I said, every goal has come off a turnover, but it's not just been a turnover. It's been a turnover and then an amazing pass by whether it's Glass, Pacioretty, Stone, Carlson, Marchessault. They're all making great passes. And finally, the power play looks good. It hasn't. It's only scored two goals, and they did have a couple issues entering the zone last night. But once they get in the zone and they set up, this power play looks so much more dangerous than it did last year. And not only that, but at the end of the game when they pulled Fleury for the sixth attacker, they created. When this team has a man advantage, they look a lot better than last year. So that's a good sign.
At LB's mom 325, when they play Carolina at T-Mobile, will they have a tribute video for Halla? Parentheses, still miss him.
They haven't done tribute videos for anyone.
They did James Neal.
Well, okay, they just like showed like welcome back James Neal on the Jumbotron.
Enough.
Okay, I think they'll do that for Halla, absolutely. I don't think there's going to be a tribute video, but yes, they will definitely acknowledge him.
I'm just looking to see. Oh, Hannah Brooker. That's a good one. Why is Jonathan Marchessault overlooked when it comes to handing out A's or C's if that ever happened? Meaning, why isn't Jonathan Marchessault an alternate captain for this team?
I agree with her. He should be. I don't know why. The only reason I can think of is like he's just so jokey and jovial all the time that maybe it's like perceived as like he's not a captain. He's kind of a jokester.
But there's 23 captains.
But he's absolutely one of the leaders of this team. And when they lose ugly, he's the guy who comes out and faces the fire and says what needs to be said. So I agree with her. Marchessault should be considered, and they're not going to name a C, but I think he should be an alternate captain.
I have been talking about Jonathan Marchessault's leadership now for about a year and a half, really. I mean, ever since that Winnipeg game, mm-hmm. game one of the Western Conference Final, that's when he showed what type of leader he is. And while a letter is nice, he doesn't need one. Now, he should have one, but he doesn't need one. At Rob Moores, what in the world was McPhee thinking when he decided to keep the guys he kept and let Gusev walk? Womp.
Womp? Is that in the tweet?
It is, yeah. You think I just did it for fun?
Come on, like, no. What the hell was that?
That's the name of the podcast. Womp. 100%.
I know, I got a lot of that last night on Twitter. Like, everyone's like, they kept Peary and Zikov and let go Belmar and Gusev. Look at the salaries of those players, and you'll easily find out why they have two of them who are making below a million, and they let the two go who are making above a million.
So I think the short answer is salary cap.
They don't have enough money.
Salary cap.
Yeah.
The longer answer is Mark Stone is a $9.5 million player. Max Pacioretty is an expensive player. Paul Stastny is an expensive player. Marc-Andre Fleury is an expensive player. And when you are cup contenders, you end up having expensive players on your roster. Just ask the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah. And the Chicago Blackhawks.
And the LA Kings.
Yeah. That's what happens.
All right. Vegas Misfits, Halla and Gusev. Not sure what the question is. But
they've both been good.
It's just a tweet, Halla and Gusev. Eric Halla has been really good for the Carolina Hurricanes. The New Jersey Devils can't win.
That's what happens.
Which is fine.
Their defense and goaltending has been an issue.
They're going to put up points. Like, they're going to score goals, the Devils are. But, my God, they cannot defend.
Yeah, it's an issue. And goaltending doesn't bail them out whatsoever.
I can't. Well, Schneider played great, and then he cramped, and then they lost.
Who was it? Blackwood that filled in?
Mackenzie Blackwood. Yeah, he's not. Why do I even know Mackenzie Blackwood? Like, that's the weirdest name.
Why is Jonathan Quick not on the New Jersey Devils?
I have no idea.
How have they not traded for him?
Don't get it.
You're in a rebuild. You have your goalie of the future in Cal Peterson. You have no reason to have Jonathan Quick on your roster right now. You're trying to build for the next couple years.
I
trade him for a first-round pick to the Devils.
I was saying New Jersey or Carolina.
Yeah, both of them.
Either one of those teams. Make a trade for Jonathan Quick.
Yeah, I agree.
Now. Do it now. Because it'll probably end up, in New Jersey's case, getting you into the playoffs. And we all know if you get there, you can do whatever the hell you want to, really.
And Jonathan Quick has done it before.
Jonathan Quick's done it before. Or, if you're the Carolina Hurricanes, if you weren't Stanley Cup favorites before, you certainly are now.
They've looked dominant, other than their goaltending is an issue. And you can get through, as you saw with Calgary, you can get through the regular season with subpar goaltending if your team is elite. When it comes to the playoffs, that doesn't work.
No, not at all. So, that's the mailbag for this episode. We'll be back next week to kind of break some more stuff down. Jesse already answered why he told Marc-Andre Fleury to tape his stick a certain way, which is great. I love that story. And I'll tell you what. So Chapman brings it to the table on the Insider Show.
Complete lie.
Yeah. And I'm like, but that, hold on. Why would Jesse do that? And he's like, well, it was kind of more like this. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm still not, like, I'm not understanding the context. And he's like, oh yeah, well, you know, it wasn't really those words exactly. I'm like, okay, so over the course of three questions, it's gone from Jesse was telling Marc-Andre Fleury how to do his job to, well, Jesse was talking about tape.
Yeah.
Okay.
Marc-Andre Fleury and I had a conversation about taping sticks. It started with how I think they need to. So
it was, man, Pride Night.
They do the rainbow tape on their sticks.
The context is important.
The rainbow tape is designed so that the length of each color is the length of the stick blade. That way, when you wrap the tape around the stick blade, each wrap is a different color and it's a rainbow. Mm-hmm. The issue is when you do that on a goalie stick, it's wider. The paddle is wider.
Twice as wide.
So therefore, the ends of the colors end up like on the middle of the blade, and it looks terrible. It doesn't look as clean as the player. So I went up to Fleury while he was taping his rainbow stick, and I was like, man, they need to make goalie tape for this. Like, and Fleury didn't understand at first. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, look, see how it's stopping in the middle? And he's like, oh, I like it like that. I'm like, well, yeah, because Fleury's kind of a out there guy. Like, he likes the tie-dye look. But I was just saying, it would look cleaner if it was this way. And then I asked him if you tape your, like, if he's always taped his stick heel to toe. And he said yes. And then I said, oh, I've been doing it wrong. I taped mine toe to heel. And then Mike McKenna, former NHL goalie who's now on the broadcast, said, toe to heel is for posers, which he's correct. He's 100% correct on that. This is a conversation between three goalies. One is a Hall of Famer. The other is a guy who's played professionally for a decade. And the third is someone who plays roller hockey at Sahara Event Center on Thursday nights. One of these three doesn't know what they're talking about. The other two do. So in no universe did I ever tell Marc-Andre Fleury how to tape his stick.
All right. So on that note, we're going to end the podcast. Jesse, where can people find your stuff and what are you working on?
On Twitter, at JesseGranger_ TheAthletic.com. I'm going to have a cool story out here in the next day or two about where all the Golden Knights sit in the locker room. It's going to have a diagram of where they... If you ever wonder what the locker room is like, this is the story for you. It is going to break down not only where they all sit, why they like who they sit next to, why they don't like who they sit next to, who has the best angles for the TV for Price is Right and College Football Saturdays, what William Karlsson and Paul Stastny talk about every day, why one side of the room is considered the smart side and the other side is not. It's awesome.
I was in the locker room when you talked to Paul Stastny about this, and the reaction on his face when you asked him the question was phenomenal.
Yeah, it's a fun story.
He's literally looking around, and I'm like, what the hell is he doing? What did you ask him? And you're like, oh, yeah, no, I'm working on this story. And I'm like, dude, he had too much fun with that question. Yeah.
They've all had a lot of fun with it. There's a French Quarter in the Golden Knights locker room. It's awesome.
I know where that is.
The Golden Knights locker room is fun, and we get to be in there every day. So this story will kind of allow fans as close as they can get to being in the locker room where these guys hang out, painting the picture, where the TVs are, everything. It's going to be cool. So look for that in the next couple days.
And if you haven't subscribed to The Athletic, how can people do that?
We have deals all the time, but the constant one is 40% off if you go to my link, which is theathletic.com/Granger. That's $2.99 a month for your first year. Super cheap, and we have a ton of content on there. Not only Golden Knights stuff, but all your other teams. If you like a sports team, we have the best writer in the world covering that person for that team, for every team you like, I promise.
All right. I am Ryan the Hockey Guy. You can find me on Twitter at Ryan Hockey Guy. You can find me as well Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show with Frank Harnish on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, as well as on the pregame, intermission, and postgame reports for every single Golden Knights game this season. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Have you ever seen a Goofy movie?